is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, hoop heads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish home machine. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Coaches, do you have a point guard or leader you're going to be counting on next season to run the show for you? Don't leave next season to chance. Thousands of coaches send their players to a point guard college camp each summer to learn to think the game, lead a team, and run the show. Your players will be smarter, better leaders, and better equipped to foster a championship culture next season in practice and in your locker room. I've seen firsthand how PGC camps have had a huge impact on players and coaches that I know, both on and off the court. You can go to pgcbasketball.com to find a 5-day, 4-night camp near you. That's pgcbasketball.com. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. Well, actually not with, because I am at Snow Valley in Iowa and you are back home in Cleveland. But
sitting in my basement.
Sitting in your basement. Holy hell, what a game.
What? That's just the craziest game ever. And I think there's two things that I want to say, okay? I thought the Suns had, the Suns were in complete control in that first quarter. The biggest moments of the game was that first five minutes of the second quarter with Giannis on the bench and them going on that run. And it was a 14-point game when Giannis sat down and he came back in the game. They were winning.
Well, and Giannis ends up -7 plus minus because of that stretch.
And I genuinely think that was the most crucial part of the game. And I know that we could discuss both teams are shooting lights out. I felt like this was by far the best of the games that we've had so far. Do you agree with that? Like, I just felt like the offense wasn't necessarily what we wanted. I mean, God, Milwaukee's offense is still terrible. Like, I'm saying this to a team that's won 3 games in the finals, but their offense is just, it's terrible to watch.
Down the stretch, especially when they needed baskets, they were just, I'm not sure what they were trying to accomplish there. I mean, well, obviously they're trying to get Middleton switched on to a favorable matchup and then see what he could create, but he was getting tired and they really weren't getting good looks at all.
Yeah, we've given him so much crap this whole time. We have to give Holiday his due today because I felt like Holiday played really, really well. And he still can't dribble the basketball. And he still has some boneheaded plays, but I mean his stats today were far superior. He went 12 of 20 from the field, 3 of 6 from behind the arc. He didn't get to the free throw line. He was plus 14. He had 27 points. He had 13 assists, 4 rebounds, and yeah, you know he definitely was a positive impact in this game for them. Finally.
Well, you had all 3 of their big three.
The big three.
They play well. You're not. I don't think you're beating Milwaukee if all 3 of those guys go for 20 plus. I just don't think it can happen. And it almost did, but Holiday misses that shot after you come out of the timeout with whatever, there was 5 seconds to go on the shot clock. He kind of has to chuck one up. They come down, Booker gets in the lane, and then the steal. And then what I noticed too on that play, obviously it's an unbelievable play by Jrue Holiday, but Giannis starts out like 6 steps behind PJ Tucker
and outruns him and ends up getting that alley-oop. The slow-mo replay of him catching that alley-oop and then ducking under the backboard. I mean, just the athleticism that he showed on that play. It was unbelievable. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, I will say, like, the Bucks are going to, this is going to be quite the tale that they're going to be able to tell, that when you're going to say that one of the starters for the Bucks averaged playing, you know, like 25 to 30 minutes, and they averaged like a point a game, because PJ Tucker 25 minutes.
I'm at the point now where, look, I know they can't really play. I know they don't really have anybody else to play any minutes, but PJ Tucker, I'm not sure what he's really doing. Like, I thought he did a good job on Durant, and it sounds crazy because how well Durant played in that series, but I thought he made Durant work. I'm not sure he's making much impact on the defensive end of the floor right now. He's not rebounding. He doesn't score. I'll tell you what his best skill is.
What's that?
Complaining to the officials.
Oh, him and Booker are good at it.
Him and Booker are the two that they're whining on. I mean, PJ Tucker and Booker are like grabbing people, like almost like they're intentionally trying to foul. And then after the foul is called, they're both just whining. I can't watch either one of them very much more after the whistle blows. PJ Tucker, without him, we're getting a lot of Jeff Teague minutes. Which
Mike, I got an observation. LeBron was at the game tonight. I think since he was at the game, the other players were trying to get a part in Space Jam 3. They were acting so well. They were trying to get a part in Space Jam 3. What is your take?
I don't know. I don't know anything about Space Jam. I don't know anything about Space
Jam. Let me just
tell
you, I watched the first 30 minutes of Space Jam and I promptly turned it off. That's all you need to know.
Okay, well, I was never going to turn it on in the first place, and I can't say that I'm stunned at all. Yeah, PJ Tucker has to play because they just don't have anybody else. Jeff Teague played 8 minutes, plus minus negative 11.
His 8 minutes, by the way, when he was in the game in like the first 5 minutes of the game, I was talking to my friend at the time, and I'm like, how is Jeff Teague getting minutes this early in the game? This is atrocious. And immediately they scored like three straight points on them. I feel like they just kept Booker kept attacking him, like every possession down the floor. Am I misremembering that, or is that correct?
No, you're correct. I think, well, Booker was phenomenal tonight. I mean, other than the complaining to the officials, the shots that he was making were ridiculous. And he's got such an elevation on his jump shot that the one he made over Holiday where he came off the screen on the right-hand side, or I guess he came off the top. The screen was at the top, and he was coming to the right wing, and he caught it. And Drew Holiday's like right there in his face, basically makes contact with his follow-through, and Booker still drained it. That was a huge shot there in the fourth quarter. But Booker plays 42 minutes, and there was a stretch. I think he played the whole second half, if I'm not mistaken.
He played so well tonight, and I feel bad for him. He's playing so well, Mike.
He had the one bad game. His game three was bad when he went 3 for 14.
But the last two have been great.
He's been their best player. I mean, tonight he's plus 12 again. And so in the minutes that he sat, they lost by 16. So in 6 minutes that he sat, they were minus 16. That's the difference in the game.
And Chris Paul was better tonight too. He was better tonight.
He was. I still don't know that. I don't know. He was better. He was definitely better, but it felt like they needed more from him. They needed a little bit more from him. Phoenix. Yeah, when you look at Phoenix's roster, when you really look at what they have, you have Crowder and Bridges. Bridges had the one big game, and Crowder's been shooting it well from three, but neither one of those guys are creators. Ayton gave you another good game, 10 rebounds, 20 points. But Ayton's not really – I mean, if you get 20 out of Ayton, you got to be ecstatic. I think they needed 25 a game from Chris Paul in this series, I think, in order to win it. Because Booker's been really good, but Paul has been good. I'd say he's been good but not great.
Yeah.
Except in game one. Game one, he was great. The next four games, he's been good to maybe less than good, especially in game four. I thought he wasn't up to par, but – they need just a little bit more from him because I just don't know where they're getting. I don't know where they get scoring. If Booker's not scoring, it's a struggle.
Jay Crowder, he had 8 points. How many points did he end? Wait, how many points did Jay Crowder end up with?
Crowder ended up with 10.
He had eight in the first 6 minutes of the game. He hit those two threes in that dunk, and then he disappeared.
But that's who he is. I mean,
I know. Oh, no. I'm saying. I know you can't bank on that. But when he had 10 points the first, you know, or 8 points in the first few minutes, I was like, holy crap, what's going on there? And then
these two teams, we've been saying it all along, they're both flawed, and they both have areas of weakness, both defensively and offensively. And it's really been a war of attrition. I just think that the Bucks in these last three games they've just been tougher. I don't know if they've been tougher physically. I don't know if they've been tougher
except
mentally.
Except for P.J. Tucker.
Yeah. I don't know what to make of P.J. Like you said, it's when you look at the statistics from this series and you're going to say P.J. Tucker averaged 1.8 points per game and he was a starter who played at least half the game every game, it's going to be kind of amazing that the Bucks are going to be able to win a title if they end up closing it out.
Okay, so
six.
I have a question, Mike.
Sure.
How many games does it take the Cleveland Cavaliers to beat this Bucks team? Of 2015. 2015 Cavaliers, they didn't win the championship. How many games?
Five.
How many games do the 2016 Cleveland Cavaliers? That's a sweep, right?
That's a sweep, yeah.
The 2017 Cleveland Cavaliers, Kyrie's still on the team. That's a sweep.
Five. Nah, it's five. I'll give Milwaukee one game.
Okay, 2018, the Cavaliers don't have Kyrie, but they still get to the finals. How many games? Six, maybe?
That's a more even series. That series is a toss-up. That roster for the Cavs was god-awful.
They swept every team except for Toronto that season in the playoffs,
they lost to – they beat Boston in the final – the Eastern Conference Finals, four to three in Game 7. There's no way that team. I would favor Milwaukee in that series.
Oh, okay, all right. Well,
but I think the Cavs win three titles there, for sure. I mean these teams are not at that level. These are not by any stretch of the imagination are they historically great teams. However, we've kind of talked about it a little bit over the course of time, and it's. You know, maybe it's early to say what's going to happen as far as legacies go, but for Chris Paul, winning this makes a huge difference in how he's remembered, and he gets out of that club of guys that were all-time great players that haven't won a ring, Barkley, Malone, Stockton, Steve Nash. He gets out of that group versus if he loses it, especially having been up 2-0 and then losing four straight, and he's been good. He's been average to good. He hasn't been great except in game one. I mean, it's a stain, and I don't think there's any way that you can avoid it. Again, depending on what happens, I guess, in game six, if they were to lose it, if Paul has a great game, maybe it's less damaging to who he ends up being remembered as. But for Giannis, 2-time regular season MVP, clearly going to be the finals MVP if the Bucks win. I mean, Middleton's been really, really good. But there's no way that Giannis is not the MVP of this finals if the Bucks end up closing it out. And so he'll have an NBA Finals MVP, an NBA Championship, two regular season MVPs, all before the age of, I think he's still 25, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe he's 26. I think he's still 25 years old. And, it's just, it's pretty impressive. I mean, it really is. What do you got? What are you laughing about over there?
I was just people's tweets talking like, oh, there's no way the Suns should have even won two games, let alone one or something, yada yada yada. So I don't know.
I disagree. I disagree with that. I know. Go back to those first two games, and I mean there were clearly reasons why Phoenix won those games.
Yeah, I know. These people.
They shot the lights out in which was that game, I can't even remember now, game one, game two, where they were 14 for 28 from three, or where they were 20 for 40 from three. And their offense was clicking, and they were doing lots of good things, and the Bucks just didn't have it going. The Bucks are not going to lose when Middleton, Giannis, and Jrue Holiday play the way they did tonight.
Yep. Well, and then they're talking about how LeBron had his own bottle of tequila tonight in the stadium. Someone said they let LeBron bring his own bottle of tequila into the arena tonight. And then LeBron just retweeted it and said, they let me. Okay, we'll go with that. BYOT, bring your own tequila. And it was, of course, it was his tequila brand that he's an investor in. So, I didn't know that he was an investor in a tequila brand until just now. So, did you know that he was an investor in tequila?
I did not. I'm not aware of LeBron's investment portfolio, but kudos to him for being invested in a tequila brand.
And getting lots of free publicity right now. So anyways, I guess from here, Mike, the question that I have is there any chance, what chance does the Suns have to win game six? Is there any chance or is this over?
It's over, but clearly they have a slight chance. I don't think Milwaukee is, can you guarantee that Middleton and Holiday are going to play well? I don't think you can guarantee it. I put it at about 10%. I expect Milwaukee, first of all, their fans are going to be going crazy, number one. And they're going to be, look, Phoenix is going to be desperate, but Milwaukee's going to be desperate too, because Milwaukee does not want to fly back across the country to Phoenix and play a game seven. I thought tonight that if Milwaukee had lost, although they would have blown a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter, so that would have been pretty disheartening, plus the missed free throws that might have potentially cost them this game. I still thought that they could recover from that loss because they were going home and that they could win game six and then potentially win game seven as the game was going on. I felt more and more like if Phoenix loses this game, especially the way they started it, that it was going to be devastating for Phoenix.
Listen,
and I don't think Phoenix has any chance.
I agree. And you know what's more importantly? I think there's going to be lots of babies born in April of next year, Mike. In Milwaukee, that is. I think there's going to be lots of Milwaukee babies, just like Cleveland. Cleveland had a boom after they won the finals. I think it's going to happen. Milwaukee's going to have lots. There's going to be lots of babies, especially after the game tonight, Mike. That's what I'm going to say that right there. That's why I'll leave it. I'm going to leave it there.
I'll leave it there. Let's talk quickly. Middleton, again, for stretches from the mid-range, was terrific. I mean, he was very, very difficult for Phoenix to stop. Milwaukee's offense, as we talked about a little earlier, kind of gummed up there at the end, and they went to the screen roll, and then when they couldn't get the matchup on Middleton, or when Phoenix sent a double at him, they didn't always attack it perfectly, but they got just enough from that particular strategy with either Middleton getting a shot or Giannis got to the basket a few times, and they scored just enough to hold on to that lead, but they made it really dicey with the free throw shooting. Giannis was not as good on the road. It seems like he's shooting free throws far better at home. And
yeah, well, sure, Mike, listen, I joked with you that he missed the free throw so badly at the end of the game it got them the offensive rebound.
It did. That's a really hard shot to rebound when the ball comes flying off the front of the rim at 90 miles an hour. It's a really difficult shot to rebound. That was the one that he back-tapped, right?
Yeah.
So the one he back-tapped, now maybe he was aware of what was going on behind him, but that was a pretty risky play. If he back taps that, and somebody from Phoenix is back there too,
and I'm watching the play. I'm watching it right now. Booker was actually really close to getting that ball. Like he's from the middle of the lane. He almost got there. You know, like if he had one more step, he would have got it. So
it was a risky play. Like it turned out to be a very good play, and it turned out to work in their favor. But if he back taps that and somehow Phoenix comes up with it, if Booker has one more step or there's somebody else back there, because I'm not sure, he never looked back, at least not that I saw in the replay, unless he had already looked prior to that and kind of had an idea. But that to me was a pretty risky play, and it ended up being a huge play to be able to get some second shots. And again, Milwaukee, throughout the game, it felt like they generated a lot of second shots. So you look at, I guess the disparity wasn't as great tonight. They had 11 offensive rebounds. Phoenix had 8. How many shots did each team get up? So the Bucks got up 87 shots, and Phoenix got up 87 shots. So Milwaukee's been winning that possession battle, but they didn't win it quite as decisively tonight as they did the night before. Phoenix only had 8 turnovers. The Bucks had 11. So essentially, it was pretty even. It was pretty even statistically. And neither team got to the line all that much. Milwaukee got there a little bit more, mostly, again, due to Giannis just taking the ball to the basket. And he's getting really good at slithering past guys and kind of getting his hip past them and then picking up those fouls. You just got to knock them in. Here's my question for you. Is he going to – are people going to chant for the rest of his career
until changes his – Is he going to – 100%. 100%.
It's like it's going to be Hack-a-sh- – instead of Hack-a-Shack, it's going to be Kana Giannis.
Is he going to change his routine? Do you change your routine in the offseason and
shorten it? He has to.
Yeah.
He looks like a buffoon, quite frankly. I'm sorry. He's a buffoon. The fact that he's getting so much time to shoot, to do like the practice warm-up shots is absurd to me. I think it's absolutely absurd.
I would think that that's something that the league is going to put an end to next regular season, that he won't be able to, because a lot of times you'll see him, he'll actually put his hand up to stop the official from passing the ball. I know one time, I can't remember if it was this series or the last one, where they threw it to him before he had done his practice visualization routine, and he got mad and he threw the ball back to the official. I can't remember which game it was, but I'm like, I don't understand how he's allowed to, because that's part of his routine. So if you count that on top of his long routine, I just don't understand what he's doing. Clearly, he's going to have to change that, because otherwise he's going to have people counting for the rest of his career. Plus, it's just too long. I mean, when you're already having difficulty at the line and you have some issues up there, you don't want to be standing up there for 10 or 12 seconds. It just gives you more time to tighten up and think about what you're doing. I give him a lot of credit, though. The one thing that I will say for him, and I said it to Nick Legalbo here tonight as he was sitting in with me watching the game, I said to him, I'm like, the one thing is I don't see him being afraid. I don't see fear in his eyes when he goes up to the line. A lot of guys who don't want to be at the free throw line, even guys who are good free throw shooters, you see him and you just look at their face.
Like Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons right there. Then when he was shooting free throws in the first round, it looked like he was scared.
Right, he's scared to death. Like his eyes are shifting all around. You could just tell he doesn't want to be there. And Giannis does not look like that. Some of his shots that he shoots, you can tell whether it's going to go in.
Yep.
Right as soon as he releases it. There was one, the first one, I think of the last two that he shot. The last time he went to the line for two shots, the first one that he shot, he had a nice release. It kind of rolled off the left side of the rim. It looked good. And then the second one was the one that he clanked off the front rim that he back tapped, I think. But I give him credit because it would be very easy to do what Ben Simmons does, which is I'm afraid to shoot. I'm afraid to keep going to the basket. I don't want to get fouled in clutch situations. And he is not doing that whatsoever. Yep. I mean, he's continuing to just rampage to the basket. And I don't know what he's shooting. He's got to be shooting close to 60%. I think they show – I forget what they showed. He's shooting like 64% for the series, something like that, from the floor. And he's done – he's turned a corner in this series when you start thinking about him as – I mean, it's no longer is he a current great in the game. You're starting to, if he wins this title and he does it at age 25 with, I don't know, another 10 years ahead of him, he's turned the corner. We talked about it a little bit earlier when he had the back 40s, that he's turned the corner heading towards being an all-time great player. And it's been fun to see because he's just a player that is so unique. He's so different from anybody that's played before because of his length. I mean, he makes, not only is he devastating inside with his physicality, but tonight, I mean, he had some beautiful passes where he drove in and kicked, drew the defense, and then hit guys for threes. He's really, really showed off his entire package in this finals. And for a guy who, in this regular season, people really discounted what he was able to do in the regular season. If you look at his statistics compared to his two MVP years, they're virtually identical.
Yeah.
And he had no buzz whatsoever. I mean, nobody was going to give him that MVP award this year. And he didn't deserve it. Jokic was clearly the best player over the course of the season. But there was no even remote consideration for Giannis. Whereas if he hadn't won two MVPs previously, he would have been right there in the discussion because he played – I don't think he played all 72 games like Jokic did, but he played 66, 67, 68 games, something like that. So
yep.
It'll be interesting to see how that changes the narrative for him going forward. I know there was a lot of talk that, like, look, based on what he's done in the last two playoffs, that he's never winning another MVP. And now you look at it and you say he's 25 years old. He's already got two plus a finals MVP and a championship. And Middleton and Holiday are both still young enough that we know this isn't a great team and the league is going to reload around them. But those three guys are going to give you an opportunity, especially in the East. You're going to have an opportunity to get back to more finals depending on what happens in Brooklyn.
Yeah, well, come on. Do you not give the Cavs any chance, Mike? You know, gonna have a great roster next year. We got a guy who can't even play in the Olympics because of his calf. We got Colin Sexton who keeps gonna talk about trade. Come on, the Cavs have a chance. We got a shot.
Hey, we traded future Olympian JaVale McGee. That was disappointing back when that happened. So
yeah, oh yeah.
All right, let's make some predictions and then get out of here.
All right, I think the Bucks close it out, Mike. It's done. I'm waving the white flag. I'm waving the white flag.
Is it a competitive game?
I mean, I think it's competitive. It's competitive at least in the first half. That's my prediction. The first half.
All right. Well, that's not competitive.
I think it's a 5-point game at half.
Does it come down to the last 5 minutes, like it did tonight? Is it a game like tonight where it comes down?
I hope so. But I don't think so.
I agree. I don't think so. I think
do you hope so, or do you just want it to be over? Here's a question, Mike. Would you want a game 7? Or do you just want the Bucks to win? Because I know you're picking the Bucks all the way through.
I've become a big Bucks fan for whatever reason. And so I would be happy with a 40-point win by the Bucks, despite the fact that I'm a basketball fan and would love to see another game just from a basketball standpoint. But I've become, for whatever reason, the Bucks have captured my fancy, so I'm rooting for the Bucks.
Oh well, I mean, like I said, I think they're going to win anyway. So
Milwaukee 122, Phoenix 101.
Oh wow, 21-point game. I'm saying it's about a 15. I think it's going to be a 15-point win. But I'll go. 118-103.
All right, so not much different than me. Yeah, I think Milwaukee controls it and gets it done, wins it in 6, comes back and wins 4 in a row, which I don't think either of us thought was really going to be possible. And that's it.
Sounds good. All right, well, enjoy your last day tomorrow at Snow Valley, right? Tomorrow's your last day, right?
Half day at Snow Valley. It's been a great camp, a lot of fun, and met a lot of great people that I'm sure we'll be hearing from on the podcast in the not too distant future. We have coming out Sunday. Well, we had our roundtable episode that went out. What's today? I don't even know. Saturday. So the roundtable went out yesterday. And so if you haven't had a chance to listen to that, please do so. On Sunday, we have Brandon Goble from JUCO Advocate to talk about what he does in terms of scouting and helping connect players and coaches to get both of them opportunities to connect and find player scholarships and to help coaches find those players. Plus, he talks a little bit about how he built the business and some of the things that they're doing from a, helps them accomplish their mission, including running some camps in Africa and in the inner city. And so they're doing a lot of great things over there, Brandon, with JUCO Advocate. So make sure you check out those episodes when they come on. And then we will be back Tuesday night to wrap up game 6 and possibly wrap up the NBA season. So we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, it's either going to be Tuesday or Thursday. And then if it's Thursday, then we'll be a week from the draft. That's pretty crazy, Mike. You know, we got
to get some draft talk in then once the finals end. We'll have to start figuring that out. Who knows, maybe we'll have some trades at this. It seems like there's a lot of rumors swirling around the top of the draft of what may or may not happen.
It seems like it. We'll see if that actually comes to fruition or not, but it seems like it for sure.
Well, that's a discussion for another day. So thanks for joining us for our Game 5 NBA Finals wrap-up. Bucks win 123-119. Whew, great game. And we will catch everybody on our next episode. Thanks.
Hey, hoopheads, we all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com/teampricing to learn more. That's ARYSE.com.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.